Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, podcast fans, and welcome to another episode of Meta, the podcast about podcasts. My name is Peter Wells, and I apologize for taking the week off last week. It was a bit of a stressful one watching the US election, but that is hopefully done and dusted now, and we can get back to the regular episodes, which is two a week. So this is the Tuesday edition, and I think the regular schedule will be Tuesdays and Fridays for anyone playing at home. Anyway, we're going to move straight to the guests right now, and I'm speaking with Rachel Fountain and Ian Walker from the brand new ABC podcast called Days Like These. If you listen to This American Life or Reply All or Heavyweight, any of those kind of really beautifully scripted non-fiction shows, then Days Like These will feel immediately familiar to you. It is great to see an Australian show like this coming out, and it's great that they've planned for many episodes in the future. I had a great time chatting to Rachel and Ian. I hope you enjoy it as well. I've listened to the first two episodes now, and it really struck me as something that I felt, why hasn't this been done before? Like, this is, it feels very much, and I know this is, you probably hate hearing this, but it feels like an Australian This American Life in a very different way, very different. Like, it's in no way just a facsimile or whatever, but it feels like that's the kind of story you're trying to tell. Is this what you're going for?
Yeah, we don't hate that at all, actually, Peter, because for us, we sort of did look at all of those big podcasts and go, look, why isn't this being done in Australia? The origin story of it is sort of long and intricate and wild. But yeah, as long as the stories have a real kernel of hope and are just beautifully told, and I think Ian will probably go into a little bit about how we make sure that happens, then yeah, This American Life isn't bad. We also had in mind shows like Death, Sex and Money.
Okay, yep.
So yeah, and also really, really well done Australian shows like Conversations. Obviously, this is kind of like a little sister show for Conversations, and certainly our lead reporter, Pat Abood, has jumped on and sort of filled in for Richard a few times. And also shows like Australian Story. But Ian's got kind of a good little succinct way of saying it.
I think, Peter, we've looked at all the canon, right? All the shows that we've loved as podcasters sort of growing up in the business, like Love and Radio, also shows like Heavyweight, you know, This American Life for sure. I mean, we can all kind of claim in some way to be the children of Ira Glass, you know, in that we've the tenets of really amazing narrative nonfiction storytelling, you know, what goes into the thought that goes into a This American Life story is amazing and detailed, and their kill rate for their stories is something like, I believe, 50% to 70%. So we can't actually afford, you know, the 30 people in that kind of teams. Yeah, and we can't afford to kill 70% of our stories. We'd get kicked out of our job. So, but what we did was actually build in some of that thinking into the front end of our story selection. So we've made up, you know, based on some of those story making tenets, a matrix of what we needed in every story. And if it didn't fit this matrix of like about five things to be checkboxed, we weren't going to do the story. And there are things like having a protagonist, having high stakes, having what we called a swerve, which was not necessarily a twist, but something that took you away from where you thought the story was heading and in a different direction before the end. So essentially we're trying to create the best short-form storytelling podcast that we can. And yeah, we do aspire to be like the Australian This American Life. We aspire for this show to be ongoing and the ABC's play in this market into the future. So, yeah, we've got high hopes.
Yeah, well, that brings me to my next question then, which is I can imagine when you're doing a show like this that you record a whole bunch and bank them up so you've got a lot of material ready to go. How many shows have you so far recorded, and how did you decide which were going to be the shows that you wanted to open up with and set the tone with?
It's a good question. And like the EPs in us are just like, never enough. We never have enough recorded. If you let me kind of digress a bit, basically what we did with this show that was a little bit different was we always at audio studios do a kind of market testing, or we do work out what the audience gap is. You know, it's really simple. It's human-centered design, but we want to make shows that give people something that they need, that they don't already get. With this show, Kelly Reardon, who was the commissioning editor, kind of put us through, or gave us the freedom to do like a really extensive development period. So what that meant is that Ian and I got to kind of go searching for these amazing producers and reporters from like right around the country, and then work out how this was going to work. So we had a development period where we tried and tested the story matrix, where we kind of got a bunch of pilots up as well. So we had a few in the can when we got commissioned, because just doing development doesn't mean you're going to get commissioned at the ABC. We still had to like really prove our worth. So we basically, we did this intensive development period with an incredible team of producers and reporters, and then brought a few of those stories to the mix. And the majority of the stories that were done in that development period will make it into the first seasons. So this is going to be, it's an ongoing concern for us as well. So the answer of how many do we have banked up, just never enough, but we are working into the future because it's a 40-week-a-year prospect.
I think we want to be far enough ahead of our publishing schedule that we're not panicked. You know, we're not making shows week to week. We really don't want that. Mm. But also what we want in the mix is to be able to respond to some sort of stories that are kind of in the zeitgeist. And this will never be a newsy show, but it will respond to human stories about the cost of things that are happening in our times. You know, the show was born in COVID, right? And we've tailor-made it to hopefully address the needs of the audience at this time, but also to respond to some of the things that are in the zeitgeist. We've got an amazing story in season one about the consequences of conspiracy theorists and how that's affecting families and breaking down families. And it's a really personal tale. It's kind of a tricky story in that the main protagonist is sort of outing her mum. You know, we took a lot of care with that, but it kind of, we know that it's happening a lot to a lot of families, and we've done it in a way that doesn't seem like, I think, a news and current affairs story. It's much more human and personal journey than that.
Yeah, and relatable.
Yeah, right.
That's exactly it. So that idea of the zeitgeist, that's been really interesting for us, Peter, because we're kind of balancing that need to have incredibly high quality, the kill rate, you know, all that sort of stuff, against having a bank of stories and also having the chance to be reactive to things that are happening in the zeitgeist. That conspiracy story theory, which is one that Alex Lolbach brought to us and has reported, it was really interesting sitting around our team meetings, virtual team meetings, for that one, because everybody reacted to the story really viscerally in different ways. You might not have a mum who's a conspiracy theorist, but you might have a crazy uncle who is, and you might have family members who, you know, you rock up at Christmas and you know you've got to avoid the topic of climate change or something else just to get through the day. So, yeah, I think, and sometimes that's when we know that the story is hitting as well. When we all have a visceral response to it and a really good conversation and lots of questions.
The other day, so, you know, I am in Melbourne, I am in lockdown, but we're still allowed to go to the cafe, and I was at my regular cafe and I was waiting, and then I heard the owner/barista talking about how the virus was a hoax, and I thought,
time to change your favourite coffee shop.
I know. It was just like you make good coffee and you're right next to the playground. Oh, that's a shame.
That happened to my buddy at the barber in Melbourne as well. He was like, he was sitting there getting his hair cut by the barber, and the barber started talking about how COVID was a hoax and tied into climate change. He was like, no.
That's terrifying. This guy's got a knife to your neck, right?
So you mentioned just now, and also at the end of the first episode, a lovely shout out to Kelly, who obviously was running the ABC Studios podcasting unit there for a very long time. Is this like her legacy production? Is this the last show that she shepherded through?
That's a pretty nice way to think about it, yeah.
What was it like working with her? Because, I mean, it seems like I can't think of another Australian who has had such a great run in podcasting, producing such amazing shows.
Yeah, well...
Kelly's a powerhouse, right?
Yeah.
We do owe her a lot for building the audio studios from the ground up pretty much into this amazing digital first best practice unit within the ABC. You know, we're still sort of working out why things changed with that, but we do owe her a great debt for professionalizing the whole prospect, pulling together a whole bunch of different genres and selecting some amazing executive producers, and just keeping up the massively strong quality control across the whole slate. I don't know. What do you think, Rach? What's Kelly's most wonderful legacy to us?
Yeah, I think that Days Like These is pretty much... I know that it's a show that she was really... like, she felt really torn about leaving, but Days Like These would be, I guess, the biggest legacy. Also, just the fact that I think, so Ian and I, you and I, Ian, have had such an incredible time working on this show together, whereas before that, we the audio studios team is really pretty tight, even though we're geographically disparate. But I think we were very much in our own little genres before that. So, you know, I might be working on the Pineapple Project or Mindfully or whatever. Ian, you would be absolutely, you know, ears deep in The 11th or in Snowball. And although we came together and we'd talk every couple of days, we had never really cross the genres like that to get in and muck in on a big production. And I think that's probably one of Kelly's legacies, that she kind of saw COVID coming, really. And when she knew we were all going to be working from home, she made sure we were all set up and said, basically wanted us to kind of get together and make this show. And I, for one, have had a bloody ball, Ian.
Yeah, it's been a great ride. But there's something even more important, I think, for the building of the capacity within the ABC. Like, the reason that I was so fiercely for this show was to build out the capacity within our production, within our producers and our EP stable, for narrative nonfiction in all sorts, in another form. So, you know, in one way, Days Like These, it's like a training ground for new producers to learn the tenets of narrative nonfiction storytelling, right? And then the idea is that they can get capacity and move on to our longer form shows like The 11th and, you know, whatever the next thing we do with Unravel is. And so that we're building on our investment, you know, in teams like together for things like Unravel. And so we can make, you know, we can continue making the best shows in the business, right, in that area.
The cross-genre thing is quite interesting because obviously the show is going to change quite dramatically week to week. Are you pulling in, say, technical reporters and health reporters and all of the other people in the ABC studio stables to tell stories that they might not get a chance to tell on their regular shows?
Well, if we can paint a picture for you. So we are pulling people in from right throughout the ABC. And this is something that you'll have to probably slow us down about because Ian and I get really excited about. But the idea of Days Like These is that it's modular. So the core of the show and the show format is so incredibly well developed and you know, we have such a strong story matrix and we know what the show is, that we can bring on guest reporters, we bring on a new supervising producer for each story, for each reporter. So we might have somebody fabulous like Claudia Taranto come from Radio National, you know, to supervise a couple of stories. We have the other EPs like Justine Kelly or Tom Wright and Andrew Davies come on and supervising produce a couple of stories. So the idea is that not only will we be able to bring in a true diversity of stories, so people are really seeing and hearing themselves in these stories, that this becomes a training ground. And yeah, people who have that one story in them that they haven't been able to tell as part of, you know, the technology bureau or as part of ABC Broom can come in, tell that story, and while they're with us, learn all those tips and tricks and the actual trade of narrative nonfiction.
It's actually tricky, these kind of shows where you're offering different story every week. It's different than selling a serialized story where you know people are set up to know the story or they know that you're going on a journey. You know, it's a bit more lucky dip. It's a bit more like the radio. Like, you might you know, do when you switch on to Radio National. You may not know what you're going to get. But the way, yeah, the thing is about these stories is we have to build up the trust in the audience that we're going to deliver them, like, the best variety pack. You know, we're going to be the kind of Kellogg's family cereal assortment pack of audio podcasting, right? We're going to have Cocoa Pops one day. That's awesome. But then Fruit Loops the next week, and then you're going to get some Nutri-Grain on the 1 week three. You know, you won't know which one's coming, but you'll know it's really high. You know, it's going to rot your teeth.
That is so good, Ian. It's so true. Like, okay, so without giving you spoilers, because all of the episodes do have a swerve and are really surprising, you know, you've already heard the couple of episodes where you've got Spencer's superpower, which I'm not going to drop spoilers for in case somebody listening has.
No, I wasn't going to, yeah.
And then, you know, you've got a story about, you know, that long night at Mallacoota, the night before New Year's last year. And then we have stories. We genuinely have a rock star who goes on this wild journey, like a well-known rock star. We have, you know, we have a kind of a CIA-style romp through a suburban shopping centre. We've got this incredible story that takes us to Lightning Ridge and inside the world, which is kooky as of the fossil prospectors there and the opal miners. You know, we've got a plane crash story. We've got, I just am so, like, you know, a story that takes us inside a bikie gang as well. It's, and also we've got ones about love rats. Like, this is seriously, it is like that Kellogg's box that Ian's talking about. So I think production-wise, that has actually been pretty, I don't know about you, Ian, but I think it's been pretty heavy on production with that, because we're not just telling one long arc of a story. So in some ways it's really freeing to have a different narrative each week, but in some ways it also means that you start from scratch and you need to, you know, pan out the story beats and do all of that stuff and put every single story against the matrix, and we're quite brutal with it.
I think you can tell that Rachel and I are, like, so super excited about this whole venture. I mean, we've already got nearly 10 stories in the can, and season one is almost dusted, and we're into season two. But we're already feeling like the terror and the horrifying nature of what we've already created, like the high bar that we've created for season one, because that was built in the development phase where we had even a bit more time. Now we've got to do it even quicker, but now we've got to make sure we don't repeat ourselves. Mm. And now we've got new reporters who are starting from day one. You know, just today we've got a new bunch of reporters in the door. But we've got these incredible mainstays too, working with you know, such an incredible host. Elizabeth Koulas is just one of the super bright talents of Aussie audio. Patrick Abood, our lead reporter, he's probably the best story maker in the country at this point. And, you know, his star's just super rising. And then these other producers we've brought in from other parts of the audio studios. Alex Lolbeck does an incredible job of, you know, telling human stories. Sam Wicks from Double J is our kind of rock and roll guy. And he's brought these incredible stories in. And then we're starting to reach out to our regional partners, you know, in ABC, our newest reporters from ABC Canberra. And so we're trying also to get, over time, we're going to get guest reporters in who'll just do one story for us, and they might be newer to the game, or they've got some incredible story from their patch, you know, that it might be a diversity play, you know, that means that we're making sure we're not, you know, the whitest show on the land. We're going to try and do everything that we can to be have a really diverse game of stories that we select.
And also so that we can get the best stories, you know, because the best stories aren't always just happening in Sydney and Melbourne. Like, Australia's full of these wild and beautiful, incredible yarns that just because of the news cycle or because of distance, you normally can't get out to always get. That's half the beauty of this show. Like, we made this show to be fully remote, and the engineers curse us every day because they're constantly cleaning up audio and room tone and whatever, but actually we've made a real feature of it. Like, we can speak to people, or we can appoint a reporter from somewhere that normally you just wouldn't be able to get them. It's a real privilege.
So you said it was built remote only. So was that because of the looming threat of COVID, or was this something you just wanted to make sure you would be able to pull in those stories from all over the place?
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
COVID was the catalyst for it. And we kind of got together as well. Our audio studios got together when everything was first really kicking off, which I guess is like March. And in Australia was when we were all kind of working from home. And actually the audio studios team has been working from home since then. We are working remotely, I should say. So we couldn't get into studios, whereas before that, everything of ours was done in a studio. And you know, conversations famously wouldn't even do remote link hookups. They would have to be in the same studio for the majority of their interviews. And when a show like that, which is the most downloaded podcast, probably the best storytelling podcast, which we aspire to in Australia, if not the world, when a show like that can be innovative and work out how to go remote and to have, you know, Fidler in his attic studio doing stuff on the phone, we were like, well, what can we do here? We feel like as the podcast house within the National Broadcaster, it's genuinely like we need to be doing something here. We need to be making something that gives people a bit of hope. So COVID was the catalyst. And then instead of just kind of going totally knee-jerk and pumping something out, that we were like, okay, let's look at the data. Let's look what people want. And what it showed us was that they were moving away quite quickly after the initial upswing towards news podcasts, and they were moving away from that, and they wanted, you know, escapism. They wanted nostalgia and to feel safe and, you know, warm. And somewhere in there was kind of where the whole thing was born. So that's kind of the remoteness of it was an accident, but then became a real feature of it.
I think we were lucky that we didn't jump straight out of the stable, which is what was initially intended as a response to COVID, you know, back
we almost
the
did
part of the lockdown. we nearly did, and fortunately there were hurdles in the way of that happening. And I'm really glad that that didn't happen, because that happened, so that we had some time to create a kind of evergreen response. So we've created a format that's really evergreen. It's going to keep going, but it's modular enough to respond to the times as they change. So we've a lot of those really fantastic shows we talked about earlier on, that shows like Reply or Radio Lab or 99% Invisible, they have a very simple prospect, but they can kind of go anywhere within that prospect. And I think we've really come up with a format that excels at that. It's going to be really, really good for us.
In some ways, it's scary, that idea of the kind of licorice all sorts or the Kellogg's cereal box of the show, because the tone of the episodes, each episode is really different. You know, you're going from kind of a very sweary, you know, very intense rock musician kind of yarn with, you know, lots of drones and that really kind of heavy, intense, dense sound design to, you know, Monique Bowley has a story that she's done for us, which is just every time I hear it, I absolutely cack myself. It's like a funny, light, hopeful, kind of beautifully told romp, really. So it's scary, like Ian was saying, but I think that having our host Ellie link it all together, we think that that's going to be something that people will keep coming back to.
We come up with the magic glue, you know, and we think we've got the right elements that'll, you know, stitch it all together. I think a lot of people don't know about Ellie Kulas is that you know, she was the front, the host of 7am podcast, of course, here in Australia. But before that, she worked at some really amazing shows in the US, she was like an Australian, an Aussie producer done good in New York, working on shows like Gimlet, working on Reply All, in Planet Money for NPR, like all of these, you know, really amazing storytelling shows where she learned her chops. So her heart was really in this, and I knew that when we approached her, and she's been more than thrilled. And you can check that out with her. But I'd happily say that, you know, we've given her one of the best jobs that she's had, because she's playing all of her cards in this show, which is fantastic.
Yeah, she is just, yeah, her nouse and her, she just has that X factor. Like, there's something about Ellie that just makes you want to be around her, and she's so considerate and hardworking and funny. And that, you know, when you assemble a team and you put them together and you think, gosh, I hope this goes well because these are all some incredible personalities. Watching Ellie Coulis and Pat Abood work together and watching their story brains, it is like Quicksilver. It's like a chemical reaction. It's one of my favorite things of the week is anytime that we do a story meeting or a listening party or we have a weekly whip on Wednesdays, and that is just like neurons firing and story ideas and all of these beats. It's pretty cool. Peter, you should come to one.
I'd love to. Look, I mean, you know, I'm ridiculously fucking jealous of the work you guys do and the studio that you have over there. I think it's actually, like I said to you earlier, Rachel, it starts to get annoying after a certain point. Like, you know, there are other people out there trying to make fucking podcasts, and then you guys show up and create this fucking great thing that puts us all to shame, and then I have to write about it.
The thing you don't get, Peter, is we could bore you for hours about the downside of Auntie, and it's a bleak story. We're all, you know, we're all up to the gills with our you know, beta blockers and our uppers and downers and our alcohol abuse stories. So, you know,
I just got made redundant from higher ed. Don't tell me about fucking government funded. Yeah, but no, I was going to ask him. You know, I've over the last couple of years of writing this column, your name has come up a couple of times. You seem to you've worked on clearly a whole bunch of different shows from the studios. What do you find is some of the really significant differences in plotting and planning and producing a podcast versus standard radio?
It's a good question, it seems to have been debated for years, and there's still some pockets of the radio world that don't seem to get that subtle difference. But in the main part is intimacy. The second part is that you've got an opt-in audience who are very, very, very discerning and really quick to judge. So you've got to get them, you know, in 40 seconds and promise them something that delivers. I guess the third thing is that, you know, it's very competitive, and you know those shows that I mentioned before, they've set such a high bar for the shows that we do, that we're competing in a world market, right? But, you know, there's no use saying that because we make shows in Australia that they're going to be like, you know, a fifth as good. What would the use of that be? So, you know, we're bringing together a lot of smarts that we've collected over time, and we've all worked in radio. We know about radio, but what we need to do with podcasting is design a product that brings a whole lot of things together with a promise to the audience that we deliver on. And there are things that we spend a lot of time on, especially like this show, where we've got a theme song that's really out of this, you know, a kick-ass rock and roll song that gets stuck in your head.
How good are the Gooch Palms?
To do before the Gooch Palms, given us a present there. You know, the podcast artwork, we agonize about that stuff. We have some of the biggest fights we ever have with our design department about.
I was going to ask about that actually. Yeah, because I can imagine it was, and not to, you know, tell tales out of school, but I remember speaking with someone at the ABC who said that there was like every artwork had to fit a certain kind of mold, shall we say?
Yeah, there's a whole lot of things about working with a big organisation like the ABC. They have brand rules. They have rules about colours and fonts and things that don't particularly make much sense in the podcast space, actually. But we kind of have to kind of work within this framework, unless you want to get your head punched in really hard, which
this artwork one, I have to say, like normally I have to say this was a multi-day rolling brawl remotely. <Yeah.
But thankfully, you know, this was the plan B. This was the second idea, right? The first idea we almost died in the ditch about, but it actually worked. We were kind of forced into a situation where we had to come up with a plan B. And, you know, this idea of having an iconic kind of temporary tattoo, something you could, that was as silly as you could stamp on your shoulder, was kind of like the really base idea. It was based on, you know, classic 70s love tattoos. And we really wanted the heart of the show to be central to the idea. And then we thought, oh, you know, there were roses in the original one. And we thought, no. We want this to be completely Aussie as well. So we thought, wow, I did a search on, you know, like Australian flora tattoos. And I found that people had tattooed their legs with wattle and shit.
It looks great.
And it was just amazing. And I sent that to the designer with the heart. And they came back with what we've got. And we and then, you know, there was several back and forth. We wanted the banner. We didn't want the ABC strap. We wanted something that looked like a logo unto itself. And we got all that. And God almighty, Rachel and I just had the biggest sort of dance ever when we've landed on that.
Yeah, yeah. And that's actually
the things make us happy, right?
It's the little wins. And I have to say that the designer is Claire Darcy, who did our design. And she's behind a couple of the really, really great ABC podcast tiles, actually. Fierce Girls, I know, is one of hers.
All of the Unravel set came by Claire. She's great.
And I love the Yeah Nah song. What a great... Is that in every episode?
Yeah, yeah. So actually, and Ian, props to you for finding this as well, because we were really inspired by Heavyweight. You know, that was something that we kept going back to. And just the fact that it's the only song, I don't need to tell you this, Peter, but it's the only one that has lyrics. Like, it's pretty much the only podcast theme song that isn't super production-y. And it just sounded so scrappy and Australian, and there's something unfinished and so just like, oh, we're not going to take ourselves too seriously. Like, we'll take the listener seriously. We're going to give them the best fucking story we possibly can, but we want this to feel really unique and Australian and not just like some rip off of This American Life.
There was a funny story about finding the song, in that we started with the title of the show is a total inspired by the Lennon song, right? Nobody told me. Yes, nobody told me there'd be days like these. It's the Lennon song. I went to our rights people to see if we could get a cover made by, you know, someone Aussie, someone new, you know, to do a cover of that song. I think the price started at $100,000. And I thought,
yeah, nah.
Yeah, nah.
That's what I love about it as well, because it, not only is it, yeah, nah, the most Australian expression of all time, but I could never imagine any kind of podcast from NPR or the BBC having a swear word in its theme song.
Yeah, we couldn't believe it when we got it through.
Right. Don't tell anyone.
Yeah, I don't think the bosses know just yet.
A few emails have been exchanged, but none of them, you know, I have it in writing that we got approval.
Fantastic. Well, is there anything else? I mean, you've given us a hell of a lot of ideas to look out for there with the plane crash and the conspiracy theories and everything else. I mean, where are you going to go with season two if that's just season one?
It's the plan is really that this is... you know, I guess we're thinking about this as, even though we might be making it sort of 10 episodes at a time, really, we want this to be a constant companion for people. So we want you to know that you've got a Days Like These episode pretty much in your feed most weeks of the year. So we're just going to have to keep evolving. We're going to stay really strong to the story matrix, and we're pretty brutal about that in terms of we do have that kill rate built in. It would be lovely if we could reflect the times of year while staying evergreen, I think. Does that make sense? Do you know what am I trying to say, Ian?
Oh, well, I guess we're looking at, you know, season two comes out in January, and that's another thing. There's rarely any, you know, big products coming out in the holiday season. Everyone goes to sleep usually, right? So we've designed this to be 40 weeks a year, and you won't even notice the gaps in the schedule, because we'll fill those up with bonuses. Hopefully we've got some user-generated content on the way as well that might fill in those three-week gaps that we we have. And so the summer season will be a kind of promoted, I guess, as a sort of road trip companion. You know, we're going to, by then have 10 shows in the can, and we'll knock out another, you know, weekly shows from the second week of January to augment your road trips and your summer holiday wherever you can get to, you poor peeps of Melbourne. You know, you might be driving around the block, but who knows? But, you know, we're really going to tilt it towards having the best bingeable feed in all of podcast land here. You know, we're really hoping that's our legacy.
So back to your point there, Rachel, is it like, say, how Die Hard isn't necessarily a Christmas movie?
Exactly that. Yes, that is exactly the reference. We were talking about that the other day and how, because I love a bit of Christmas, and we're like, okay, we want a Christmas episode, but how do we do it? We're like, the Die Hard version. That's it, the Die Hard method.
yeah, you did make a call out to the audience in the episodes that I've listened to. Have you gotten some really interesting stuff coming through? Are there some stories that you never would have been able to commission yourself?
Yeah, and there's stuff. So the email address is, shameless plug, dayslikethese@abc.au, and we genuinely want people's stories. We also did we got some interesting stuff through. I jumped up on the radio on overnights, you know, a couple of months ago, and did a call out, and as well as a lot of people asking me how to download a podcast, I got a couple of stories that have been really incredible, kind of testing ground and fodder. So we do want people's stories to come in. There's this thing that Ali says about it, Peter, which is it's like the best story that you hear about a mate of a mate. And it is, and that's how a lot of the stories happen. It's kind of someone going, oh, you know what, my partner's mum said this, or, you know, I heard this story, you know, literally at the pub in the States where you can still go to the pub. So yeah, I think we're getting a bit of momentum in terms of stories pouring in.
It's kind of terrifying too. You know, we think that if we get what we ask for, that could be terrifying to try and work out how we deal with all that material. But we will.
But do email us.
Yeah, we're hoping that, you know, there'll be kind of dozens of really short versions of the Days Like These story. You know, it'll be like every person's got one of these stories in their kit bag, right? They tell it at the dinner party or the pub or at the family dinner. And, yeah, we want really short versions of that, like 1 to 2 minute versions of that, to put together in a kind of bonus special, getting or to use in our socials and stuff like that. We'd love it to spread the kind of love, you know, of the Days Like These story, because they're the kind of things that we kind of live for in really difficult times, right? I mean, when we hunted around for the things that really keep us going, it's kind of like, you know, music plus storytelling plus poetry or something. I don't know. You know, there's not many other things that we're going to really need when the world's turning to shit.
It's so optimistic and so bleak. That is like Ian Walker 101. That's
I'm going to be singing when the ship goes down.
I'll be in the lifeboat, mate.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, well, I'll still be in Melbourne. thank you so much. It's fine. Look, the weather's nice. But yeah, thank you so much for your time. I've really enjoyed it. And like I said, it was one of those shows that just felt like it had been around forever, which is an incredible feat for a new show. And just also one that was like, why hasn't this been done before? And I can't think of a better studio to pull it off than you guys.
That is so nice. Yeah, thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
My thanks again to Ian and Rachel, the producers of Days Like These. And look, I know at the end of every single episode I say that I really love that show, but there's a reason for that. I've only been choosing the shows that I really love to begin this season with, so that everyone's a winner, hopefully. Or at least you can feel where I'm coming from. Either way, if you haven't checked out Days Like These, it really is a great Australian show. The ABC are doing amazing work in this space. And I will speak to you again on Friday. My thanks to Lauren Watson for designing the artwork. My thanks to James Smith for his help with the audio. And thank you to the good people at Acast for convincing me to do this show. Oh my God, I can't speak. My name is Peter Wells. I will speak to you Friday. Love ya. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.